Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, a lot of news going on that I-10 eastbound, still closed.
Yes.
Rita Road, there's been a fatal accident involving multiple vehicles, so traffic is backed up a long way. What are they advising, an alternate route, Tom?
Well, they say to avoid the area, but that's got to be kind of difficult for a lot of folks. So,
yeah, it's hard to avoid that area.
The map shows that the traffic is backed up. That's milepost 272, the Rita Road exit. So it's backed up all the way back to, it looks like, Valencia.
Oh, boy. All the way to Valencia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't need to go anywhere in that area, you're not going to get off. You're not going to get anywhere in that area from Valencia to the Rita Road exit.
No. And that will be, the investigation has been going on now several hours, and I assume probably into mid-afternoon. We are off and running on Wednesday, March the 5th, 2025. Today marks the beginning of Lent. Ash Wednesday, of course, focus on really the beginning of the 40-day Lenten period. We'll talk more with our spiritual advisor and faith advisor, Father Robert Hendrickson, will join us a little past 12:30 today. And also, Kevin Dahl is with us, and Kevin reminds me that are we in the middle of Ramadan?
We are, and you were telling me that you once visited Morocco and basically
I did. We arrived flew over from Madrid to Tangier, and we had it was very fascinating. It was the opening day of Ramadan, and here we had 10 days planned in Morocco. So it was really interesting because it changed kind of when we would be eating.
Not during daylight.
Right? No, during the vacation. So I actually enjoyed the experience just to kind of get into a completely different culture. So I did experience it firsthand on our trip to Morocco. My, that must have been sometime in the 90s. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio, and we are part of the Bustos Media Group, and our media center is located in central Tucson, 5 radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We're in our 15th year with the radio show and my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We've got our worldwide live listening. You can listen to the program live on my website, buckmastershow.com. And of course, you can listen at kvoi.com. And when we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by our friends over at Rincon Ventures, Sean and the gang, Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Now, let me formally introduce Tucson's City Council Ward 3 Council Member Kevin Dahl, and Kevin is standing for re-election, so his first, he hopes it will be his first and not his only 4-year term, will end this year in the fall. And Kevin retired in 2022 after 14 years of being the Southern Arizona, well, actually the Arizona representative of a group called the National Conservation Association, which works to protect the national parks. Boy, I bet that's a big job
It was a fun job. Luckily,
I
just had Arizona. Grand Canyon, Petrified Forest, our own Saguaro National Park, plus all the national monuments. It was a fascinating career.
But think about how challenging that would be right now.
Well, there's a lot of rangers across the board that are being fired if they haven't passed their probation period. Programs are being frozen. Not only the Park Service, but the Forest Service, they're not getting prepared for the wildfire season that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And there's the threat of a government shutdown this Friday, or is it next Friday?
I think it may be this Friday.
So when I was...
Or maybe it's next Friday. Tom can check on that when the government shutdown is...
Potential shutdown.
Okay, potential.
Hopefully they'll come. But I worked through two or three government shutdowns, and the parks were generally just closed to the public when that happened.
Yeah, and the nine-hour wait a couple of days ago up at Grand Canyon, because the probationary people, as you know, usually man the front gate.
That's right. There were four full-time personnel
yeah.
and not very well paid. I mean, it was probably a great experience for them. That was their job. And so schedules have to be juggled. And there's a lot of demand to go see the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
I don't think it was
March 14th, by the way. Tom, just
a week from
look that up for us. And of course, you've had other jobs. Tucson Audubon Society, you're very much into the birding community.
Many people say I'm for the birds, and I am.
You headed that group, and you had Native Seed Search with Gary Nabhan.
That's right.
Gary was...
One of the founders.
Who was the other one? Do you remember?
Well, there were three. Barney Burns, Mahina Dries, and Karen Reichart.
Okay.
Four people threw in $100 each and started a great organization that's done
Gary's
a lot of fine
still,
work.
Gary's still around.
He is. He lives in Patagonia and is still writing books. I think he may have written 30 books at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Great writer, poet, and a scientist.
And speaking of books, you're the author of Wild Plants of the Sonoran Desert, still available at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, and Native Harvest, Authentic Southwest Gardening. And I want to ask you a question about this, how the plants are handling this. This is now the driest August through March, the beginning of March. We've had approximately 1 inch of rain. Weather records have been kept in Tucson since 1895. This is the driest period.
We're in a drought, that's for sure. And our plants are adapted to two rainy seasons, the winter rainy season, which hasn't come, and the summer rainy season. What I've read about the models for climate change, and our recent experience is following those models, it's not only going to get hotter in Tucson, but it's going to get drier. And the summer rains will be stronger. Do you remember last July when we had that unprecedented storm and many trees were blown over?
Do I remember? And I'll take you back. Remember the year before. And that's the worst summer of my life, not only on my personal, folks that know my personal situation, but then to lose all the trees up at the Buckmaster Bungalow and with neighbors who lost portions of their roof. So the last two monsoon summers have been devastating with high winds.
Yeah, it makes sense. With the higher heat that's human-caused, there's more energy in our weather system, and so the storms are going to be stronger, and that's what we will experience. So we need to do things about climate change. Hey, we need to pay attention to the plants now. Plants that may not normally need some watering might need some extra watering, and if you look carefully at a plant, it will tell you if it's shriveled, if it doesn't look happy. Give it some extra water. A deep soaking, a very slow deep soaking would be the way to deal with trees and bushes.
I've got a beautiful totem. Do you think maybe once a week would be appropriate?
I think probably so.
Yeah. And some of these plants, normally you wouldn't do much. Think about it, really.
The winter rains take care of all the native plants.
Sure, the winter
usually.
Rains, but we have not received the winter rains, and we might get some rain. Tom, are you hearing we might get some rain sometime this week? Yeah, hopefully. I think the percentage is about maybe maximum 40 or 50%. There's that forecast. Yeah, 20% chance of showers, and then, not real promising.
Sometimes it rains when it's 20%.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Why don't we take the break here and then come back about some of the city business, the budget, Prop 414. Let's take the break here a minute or so early. We are with Kevin Dahl. Kevin is on our show. We try to do this depending on, sometimes with holidays, we can't do it because of council meetings, but we try to bring him in the first Wednesday of every month. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Kevin Dahl is here, Tucson City Councilman. Kevin represents Ward Number 3 on the All-Democrat Council. And we do have the election, Proposition 414, which is it's asking for a half-cent sales increase. And Kevin, what's your gut feeling? As they say, you didn't get off the bus yesterday. You've been around town a long time. We've had kind of this streak of, what, three or four of these that have passed. We did have what some might call an anomaly that didn't pass, and that had to do with TEP.
Right, the franchise agreement.
So what's your gut on this?
My gut is that it's going to pass. It's not going to pass by very much, but I think the variety of things that we're funding that are so important, and the fact that when people know that our funding has been reduced from the state shared revenues from income tax and from federal grants, many of our programs are threatened from that. Having a local source of regular funding for police, fire, some of the social things we do, the community safety programs that we have, and other things that make this a vibrant city, I think people will be willing to support that.
Narrowly, my prediction, and I don't know whether it's going to pass or not, but whatever way it goes, it will be very, very narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, can we quickly talk about some of the arguments against it with you? That
sure.
Yeah. You know, why were these items not in the regular budget? That's kind of usually the number one thing that comes up from the opponents.
Well, some of them have been funded by federal funding that was were to increase infrastructure and to help us get out of COVID. And that funding is going away. So we set up some programs that we like. We want to keep them around. So they've never been in the our community safety, health, and folks, the people, who, the social workers that go out and help people that are in trouble or on the street, who are first responders rather than taking up the time of a commissioned law enforcement officer. That was a new program, and I'd really like to see that continue. Some of it is we're still recovering from the 2009 recession when we had to cut back so much of our public service. We haven't been able to regain the number of police. Part of it's growth. We've grown into new areas, and we need another fire station to service that area. Mm-hmm. And some of it's equipment that has to be replaced on a regular basis and hasn't made it into our budget. The general funds are not very small, but they're a portion of our budget. Tucson Water is almost an enterprise fund, and it's your water bill pays for everything from Tucson mm-hmm. Water. We can't take that money from Tucson Water and put it into the fire department. Likewise, garbage collecting and recycling comes from a fee that people pay. So
those are dedicated then, so you can't move those.
Can't move that money out of that because mm-hmm. people have paid a fee for garbage
right.
services. Right. So we're constrained, and we're losing funding from the state and likely to lose funding from the feds. So I think we're being proactive, and all my colleagues agree, we want these programs to continue, and in some cases, like the police, increase. Now, the arguments against it also include the ridiculous supposition that we're buying an airplane so that there can be fascist-like surveillance. The police use helicopters. We have ancient helicopters, and borrow a plane from Pima County to do this work. When we want to do things like stop drag racing on streets or those intersection rodeos where... To capture those people, the police cannot do high-speed chases. That's just dangerous for everybody. But a plane, who practically can't be seen, can follow those people to their homes where they can later be arrested. So it can do more than one surveillance, and it's not low like the helicopters that wake you up in the middle of the night when they're doing an active
chase. With a
chase.
Big searchlight and all that.
Yeah.
Listener Michael has a question. This just came in on my email page. Michael says, Bill, please ask Kevin how the city of Mesa has a general fund of $558 million and spends 53% on public safety, and the city of Tucson has a general fund of $740 million and spends 30% on public safety. Would you ask Kevin if Tucson has a priority problem?
Well, comparing apples to oranges, it's how you account for your budget items makes it look like we're not spending enough on police. We're more like 40 or above in spending for police. But places like Mesa, they lump in their line item for police all the city services that support police, procurement, human resources, other business services, fleet maintenance. We have those separated out in our budget, so it takes a little while to tease those together to get a real picture of how we support our police department. Mm-hmm. We're very supportive. I'm personally very supportive of our police department, and it's one of the reasons I'm strongly supporting and urging a vote for 414. The idea that if this is defeated, we'll find money elsewhere is just not true.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the argument, Kevin Dahl, about... This half-cent sales tax pushes us over 9% of sales tax, and this is going to hurt all businesses.
Well, businesses just pass it on. It may be some businesses that have very large items, like automobiles. Someone might decide to go outside of the city to purchase an automobile. When I look at who's opposing it, I see that it's the automobile companies in town that are opposing it. But... these are providing services that help everybody. So everybody who's paying the tax is getting some benefit from this. That, again, another reason why I'm urging people to vote yes.
Mm-hmm. Here's argument three. There's three major arguments, and I think I'm hitting on all three. The city manager will, if it passes, the city manager, Tim Tomier, who will be my Friday Focus interview this Friday. Tim will be here. I think he's going to be in studio even. Will appoint an oversight group that this is what's been done with when the parks Measure Pass, the Roads Measure, and I forget the other one, but
yeah,
there's been this oversight group, right?
Right.
Well, the opposition says the books are cooked here.
Yeah.
Well, the people that Tim, he's going to appoint people that are big supporters of this.
So. Yeah. We operate under state open meeting laws. So who these people are, the meetings are open to the public, there's a call to the audience. These arguments are not being made by people who have served on other oversight commissions. And in fact, why don't you interview them and get their experience? Was there corruption that they helped pass through? It's volunteer positions. It's people who aren't going to make any money from where this money is being spent. It's a red herring. It's a bogus argument.
All right, let's move on to city business. You've got the budget. Speaking of the budget, in 2 months, you're going to get a budget package.
Yeah, and we've been looking at items in the budget since, I think, the end of January. Luckily, we don't try to do the budget all at one time because our heads would explode. And we have some really talented people who are on staff who are doing budgeting, and we've been paying attention to the numbers all along. We do a 5-year projection every time we do budget, and by July we have to come up with, by June we have to come up with a budget that will last us from July through. And
it must be balanced, right?
It will be balanced. Yeah, we can't borrow towards it.
Borrow $200 million to cover you.
No, we're not the federal government. We can't go into debt deficit.
Yeah.
Nor can we print money.
Yeah.
So it will be balanced, and we hope it won't be balanced on the back of our excellent workforce and the programs that we have. So we're still looking at things that we can do. Last night, we were looking at, for instance, employee compensation and our healthcare package. You know, everybody's healthcare has risen dramatically recently. And so we have to account for that because we want to provide a healthcare package for our employees that's fair to everybody. But inevitably, the prices are going up.
Your call to the audience is at the end?
No, it's towards the beginning.
Okay.
It's short.
And for folks that don't know, these meetings are all open. You're a study session. Unless it's a personnel item, then you adjourn to the back room.
That's correct. Or a legal, or something in the lawsuit. We have an executive session at the very beginning. Our study sessions are in the afternoon. They can start anywhere from noon to 3, and it's published a week ahead of time, the agenda. So you can see what agenda items are happening. In the study session, we sit at a different table and we work things out. Much more formal, regular session typically starts at 5:30, but if study session has run over, it'll be a little over. And about maybe 30, 40 minutes in, there's a 30-minute call to the audience where anybody can come up and say anything they want. We can't respond. We can ask the city manager to connect with that person, and sometimes we personally connect with that person, but there can't be any back and forth because it hasn't been on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the call to the audience would be limited to, someone would get 90 seconds or?
3 minutes.
Oh, 3. Yeah, I was reflecting in my 37 years here in town, all the meetings have pretty much been in the same place. Right,
City Hall, mid-century modern. It's come back into.
Yeah,
some of the technology has been upgraded, but some have argued that we need a bigger, better city hall. But we're working out, and we have another room that's for overflow. Occasionally, there's a lot of people, and they go to the other room, and it's broadcast what's happening, and if it's a hearing where they need to speak, then they're called back to the city hall to speak.
And do you have vendors that could add? I'm just that could add to.
The only vendors that show up are people who are looking for something or commenting on something. Yeah.
Okay,
not selling us anything.
What about the each city across the country is being faced with? How are they going to handle the homeless situation in light of legislation or laws that were challenged that went all the way to the Supreme Court? Basically, it's kind of the bottom line that it was given back to the cities to decide, is homelessness a crime. Yeah. I think I've kind of characterized the way that is, kind of bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, homelessness is not a crime. However, people who are currently unsheltered can commit crimes. And so it muddies the situation. And there are also people on the street doing drugs and committing crime who appear to be homeless but aren't. They have a place to sleep, but they're out in the street doing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely, it could be considered an overwhelming situation. We are dealing with it in many different ways, including having the community safety, health, and welfare folks deal with encampments, offer services. The police have a special unit to deal with people who are having mental problems or having drug problems.
How's that working? The special unit.
Yeah, not as, the mental health unit just got an award. We don't have the mental treatment facilities that we need, the programs that we need as a society.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't since Reagan's era. We have a drug problem that is immense because fentanyl is
so
the
cheap.
Worst drug possible, and it's so cheap and so prevalent. So there's been some success stories, but clearly not enough.
And people still ride the bus for free.
Yes, currently they do.
Mm-hmm. You find that is a good way
personally,
to...
I think it's a utility,
okay.
Especially for people who are most needing of that,
mm-hmm.
who are going to work, students. It really helps people who are on a budget trying to get to, you know, a low-income job.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it convenient for visitors, too. Our bus system, our transit system, was highly subsidized all along. The fare just pays for a portion of the cost. And I think what we've seen is that it's really beneficial. Now, we have this overlay of drugs and people are on fentanyl.
People ride the bus for, you know, the argument is they ride the bus to go commit crimes.
Yeah, well, they'll pay for the monthly bill and still do it. So I'm for the fare free.
All right, Kevin Dahl, thank you very much. We'll see you in April. Where's this year going? All right.
And hopefully there'll be April showers.
So I hope so. Mid-show break. Be right back.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Yes, the demolition sale is still going on over at Green Things, and it will until all of the merchandise is moved out of the three buildings that have to be torn down because they're in the federal floodplain. So Jan and Jack, the owners, decided, well, why, you know, invest the time and money to move all the merchandise over to the new building when you can put it up for sale up to 50% off? It is a rare opportunity to purchase one of a kind, some beautiful handcrafted art and furniture over at Zocalo Village, which is part of Green Things and their 13-acre signature over there by the Rito River. ZocaloVillage.com and GreenThingsAZ.com. Today is the beginning of Lent. Lent 2025 kicks off with Ash Wednesday. Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I am a member, joins us. Father Robert is one of two dozen contributors on a regular basis to our program. He is our faith and spirituality contributor. He is a one-time national director of marketing for Brooks Brothers, who had a calling, and that calling, that journey has led him, and we're very fortunate it did, to Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Father Robert, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing really well, as well as I've been in many years, actually. So, anyway, we do have now Lent, and how are you approaching this day?
Yeah, so it's interesting. This year, I'm really focusing on some of the kind of more traditional aspects of Lent and trying to sort of figure out how to, you know, kind of get back to basics in a way. And so really thinking about the basic disciplines of sort of prayer, almsgiving, fasting, sort of those kind of very basic things that we sometimes forget when we're just giving up chocolate or something like that. You know, you just sort of forget some of the more basic essentials of the faith. So I'm really focusing on those this year.
Why don't we begin by establishing when Ash Wednesday occurs? And of course, each year it will be at a different time. And I think it would be instructive to the listeners to get kind of the idea of why it happens now. What is the time frame of the Lenten season?
So it begins a 40 days, 40 weekdays, of before Easter, and so it represents that period of 40 days in the wilderness that Jesus went through, and it's a time of fasting, of contemplation, of prayer, and it begins a season of preparation for the joy of Easter, and it's really in the earliest days of the church, it was a time when those who were preparing for baptism at Easter would do their final preparation for to be baptized and welcomed into the life of the church, and so it's a time that I view it as almost the beginning of a pilgrimage, a sort of internal spiritual pilgrimage to kind of recover a sense of who we are and what we're about, and to kind of reorient ourselves back toward God in the midst of all the kind of distraction of life. So I think for different people, it has different meaning in different seasons in their life. There are some seasons where you just have a sense of kind of being lost, and it's a time to kind of find yourself again. In other seasons, you might find yourself feeling distant from God or from those who are close to you, and it's a time to really look closely at that. And so it's really, in some ways, it's the most personal of the church seasons, because it really is about the internal work of how we are in relationship with God, how we're in relationship with one another. But I think one of the most important things is that it's a season that is not focused just on sort of atoning for the past,
But it really is about looking toward the future and figuring out who do I want to be and who do I want to be in relationship with God and those I love in the future. It's really a future-focused season that is a kind of an action reflection period where you look at what's going on in your life, you assess where you want to go in life, and you figure out what are the things that are kind of inhibiting that or sort of impeding that relation, those deeper relationships. And this is a time to try and set those aside and focus on new habits.
And it's interesting that the word Lent, Father Robert, comes from Middle English, Lent, L-E-N-T-E, which means springtime. So Lent is very much associated with the arrival of spring.
Absolutely. It's the spiritual equivalent of seed planting and preparing for a harvest or a blossoming. So it's that time, that really crucial time of preparation spiritually when we look toward Easter, but it also coincides with the very physical kind of feeling of rebirth that's happening in nature all around us.
Where did this concept of giving up something for Lent come from?
Well, it's always been part of, in some way or another, it's been part of the kind of traditional practices, probably back to the 4th century. I think we have codified it a little more in terms of how we talk about giving up a thing for Lent. But that notion of giving up different things for Lent has always been part of it. So, you know, for stretches of the church's history, you wouldn't eat meat for the entire period of Lent except on Sundays. For other parts of the church's history, you might avoid, you know, the reason we have Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, whatever the cell is, Shrove
have
Tuesday.
Have that last big meal,
that's right.
Yeah,
the last, you eat all the butter, all the sugar, stuff in your house on that last day because you were going to give it up for Lent, right? And so that's always been kind of inherent to it. And I think, you know, some people, I think the mistake that happens is some people just use it as a kind of time for self-improvement. You know, they say, well, now I'm going to go on a diet. Well, you probably should have done a diet for the entire year. This is really a time that's supposed to be a little more focused on the kind of spiritual life. But in our self-improvement driven culture, people tend to approach this as a 40-day self-improvement challenge.
You know, it's almost like when people do the New Year's resolutions and they don't work out right after the first 48 hours, they think, I'll pick it up in Lent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like you don't go to the gym for the first 2 weeks of the year because it's always packed. We have the same problem, you know, or church is packed for 2 weeks after Lent.
And it's interesting when you think about the fasting, and there have been through the ages many different rules considering it. You know, traditionally only one meal was allowed in the evening with meat, fish, eggs, and butter. And we were talking in our first interview with Councilman Kevin Dahl that this is also the time of Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And I was reflecting on how when Ann and I were in Morocco, we arrived in Tangiers on the start of our vacation, which was Ramadan, and there would be no food available. We'd be basically doing one meal in the evening, and it turned out for 10 days. I enjoyed it very much, just something completely different.
Yeah, I think part of it is that break in habits is actually a really intentional part of the Lenten observance, is sort of trying to break habits. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, psychologically, we think that it takes about 30 days of doing something consistently for it to become a new habit. And so maybe the folks who were sort of shaping the liturgical season understood that, you know, maybe it would take an extra 10 days to really get it right. But it is part about breaking sort of living in a mindless way, mm-hmm. and sort of refocusing on living with a sense of purpose. Because I think, you know, there's nothing worse than a kind of meandering life that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And I think this is an opportunity to refocus on what's important in your life and refocus on the path you're going to take to get to that deeper place.
And Ash Wednesday, was that always part of going back all the way to, I guess, 600 AD when Pope Gregory set the official period of Lent? Was there then an Ash Wednesday that coincided with that?
Well, we have one of the things we have a record of is a Shrove Tuesday. So the
Shrove Tuesday.
The Tuesday before Ash Wednesday.
S-H-R-O-V-E.
Shrove. Which comes from the word shriven, which means to be shriven of your sins. So there's a day when you would make your confessions and things like this. But we have a sermon from St. Chrysostom, which is a 3rd century sermon for that Tuesday. Mm. So in some parts of Christendom, these observances were happening as early as the 3rd century. Now, as you note, they didn't get codified for the wider Christian community until later on. Gregory was very assiduous about codifying things, hence the Gregorian calendar.
So
he was very intent on getting dates right for the mm-hmm. entire Western Church.
Mm-hmm. So the ashes come from where?
So we actually burn the palms from Palm Sunday of the previous year. So when you go to church on Palm Sunday and you get those palms, the one of the traditional customs is to take it home, put it behind a cross or an icon on your wall, and then you bring them back on Shrove Tuesday to be burned, and they become the ashes that we use on Ash Wednesday.
What about the whole dust mm-hmm. to dust?
Yeah, so that's the traditional line that you say is, remember that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return. And it is that reminder of our mortality, and I think it's that you know, in a culture where we are obsessed with, you know, trying to be ever younger mm-hmm. and pretending we're going to live forever, I think those reminders that life is short and we have a limited time to love deeply is a poignant and powerful reminder. And you know, there's nothing more powerful, I think, than being in church on Ash Wednesday and seeing, you know, an 18-month-old standing next to a 90-year-old receiving the same reminder of our mortality. You look just in that vignette, you see how short life can be, but mm-hmm. also how deeply connected we are by that experience of mortality.
Mm-hmm. You know, that brings to mind, and we are up against the break. I'll bring this up actually right now, and then we can take the break in a second. But people think of Buddhism and Zen Buddhism as one of the primary tenets about living in the now. And I think perhaps as Christians, we don't utilize that enough. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but just some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think part of our
you know, live for the now.
But yeah, and I think that there's a curse of anxiety where there's an obsession either about what is to come or a preoccupation with what has already happened, both of which distract you from the gift of the present. Right. And so I do think that sense, that awareness of the present moment is a real gift from God. And so, you know, I was just reflecting. I was at Disney World of all places and had one of these moments.
You were there for a week, weren't you?
12 days.
What?
Yes. It was my pre-Lent.
You know? Oh, my goodness. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone there for 12 days. That is an extended time.
I commit all the way when I do that.
Yeah, there you go.
But I had this moment where we were at a fireworks show and this huge firework went off and it lit my kids' faces up.
Oh, that's
and
it a was great, just this, I saw the photo.
Yeah, it was just
great
this sort of
photo.
Time away from time where suddenly you realize what a gift just to be in that moment
yeah.
and to see them, you know, in that literally a different light. And I think that's the opportunity of these kinds of seasons is to reconnect us with a kind of deeper awareness of the gift that the present is.
All right. More with Father Robert from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. We'll take a break right here. Back with Father Robert after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Thank you, Tom, for putting up the current temperatures over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where we send a lot of happy Buckmaster Show listeners. They're happy after they've been over, then they come back. Bill, I had no idea. Some of these people lived in Tucson all their lives. They've never been over to the Land of Enchantment, at least that part of it. 60 degrees right now, midday. Great weather to get out and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and the Gila Cliff Dwellings Monument is there. Downtown historic Silver City, some great Victorian architecture, and some really old-timey established restaurants where they will ask you, do you prefer the green or the red chili for your chicken enchilada? Well, I don't know. Depends on the mood, I guess, I'm in. Anyway, southwestnewmexico.org is the website, and it will take you approximately 3 hours to get over to something very different, and I think you'll have a great experience. When we do our telephone live line, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we're talking with one of our contributors. I'm just so proud of this team of people that we've established here on our radio program, where we call upon people who are really at the top of their game in their field. And one of the two dozen contributors is Father Robert Hendrickson, who is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And I'm proud to say I'm a member there, and I think Father Robert does a terrific job. Hey, I just set you up there for, I think you're going to have to ask the vestry for a pay raise.
Well, I was going to say, if I'm at the top of my game, I need you to tell my kids, because they don't think I am.
So we live, of course, in very difficult times. Some would say great times. Some would say the worst of times. People are living in, it seems like, parallel universes right now. Does that present a challenge for your Sunday sermons at St. Philip's?
Well, I think there are a couple pieces of it I think that are challenging. One is that so many people exist within a media and relational environment that they have constructed solely to reinforce what they already believe. And so you have people who live in entirely different fact bubbles that don't intersect. And so that becomes a really challenging thing to sort of speak to, because you rely on a certain shared experience that people have in order to build a narrative, to build connection that requires those shared experiences. And so when people are living as if an entirely, you know, information that challenges that worldview doesn't exist, That's challenging, especially when you look back not that long ago. We remember when there were three or four networks on TV with a couple of anchors who sort of defined what news was, right, and what the facts were.
The end of the day was Walter Cronkite.
Right, and we don't have that anymore. And so that's a challenge. But I think that the bigger challenge, to my mind, is how all-encompassing that becomes. You know, with social media, radio news. God bless you. I mean, you're doing a good job, but it's not all of it as enlightening as your program is.
No.
Someone can just sit in that stew of kind of anger, resentment, and constantly sort of reinforce messaging and never step away from it, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the past, I think, you know, an hour of news a day, pretty healthy thing. 12, 14 hours of the same messages
that
you're reading
that
on your
healthy?
Phone. And then you think about this, you're standing there in line, and every 5 minutes on your phone, some alert comes up that says, here's the latest outrage you should be mad about.
So, I just got one a few seconds ago.
You know, and so it's nonstop. And and to me, you know, at church we get people, you know, if it's a good service, it's 90 minutes. You know, most people complain when it gets that long, but that's the time we have to help people sort of recalibrate and resituate these things within the context of a broader understanding of faith, history, humanity, who we all are together, and the rest of the week, they have to choose the inputs, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're constantly choosing inputs that are going to enrage you, that are going to sort of outrage you, that's a choice. That's an active choice. Mm-hmm. And someone's profiting from your outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we live in an attention economy where our attention is the most valuable thing we have. And we're all choosing to give it away for nothing and to let our health, our sanity, our sense of connection and shared purpose be sort of eroded by it. And to me, that's a scary place to be because it's hard for the church to do its work of what I would say the Book of Common Prayer defines one of the Christian duties as to bring all people to unity with one another. Mm-hmm. And that's very hard to do in a cultural environment where we are all choosing to be divided as an intentional way of living.
The first step, though, in that path of bringing people together is the fact that people coming, they've got these different political views, but the very fact that they have gathered in one place to sit in the pews, and they are sharing just by being there and together, there is a commonality.
Yes, and that I think that's one of the churches are one of the last places in our culture where that's true, and where people do gather with a deeper sense of what's important, and are sort of sharing this a common vocabulary, a common sense of who they are and where they're coming from and what they're about. That transcends the kind of divisions of the day, but there are very few places left that offer that kind of experience where you can choose to go deeper across differences for the sake of not compromising your integrity, but for the sake of comprehending what's really true in the world.
Mm-hmm. So you put aside the political beliefs when you come and sit in the pews, and then you do have this common vision, hopefully it is a common vision of what Christ taught people.
Absolutely. And I think—
Is my on the right track here?
You are on the right track. That's, okay. And that to me is the delicate balance is that the church has something to say about human dignity. The church has something to say about a more just society. And so speaking to that reality and that deeper truth without it veering into partisanship is a delicate balance. But I think it's one the church has always had to maintain since its earliest days. I think we continue to try and find that balance. And, we have a lot of folks who have shown up at our church who have come from churches that were hyper-political either in either direction.
Right.
And so we try and become a place where folks can come and with integrity gather because they are different and not in spite of it.
All right. On that note, we'll leave it right there. Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Great to see you, Father Robert.
Great to see you. Have a blessed Lent.
All right. On behalf of Father Robert and Tom, who does such a great job for us engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. And all I can say is I wish everybody well.